Hello and welcome to this episode of the Beyond Shakespeare podcast, and I'm your host Robert Crichton, and today we have a reading of The Rising to the Crown of Richard III, written by himself. Well, no, it wasn't written by himself, it was written by Giles Fletcher. It's just one of the various narrative poems on the life of Richard III that we've been looking at. There are links in the show notes to other Richard III bits of material that we have done, and hopefully we'll keep that updated in the future so that you do not miss out. There's more Richard and more history-based material to come, and you can always pop along to our website, beyondshakespeare.org, and see what else there is out there. But anyway, back to this. It comes as part of a long collection of material. Lycia, or Poems of Love in Honour of the Admirable and Singular Virtues of This Lady, to the Imitation of the Best Latin Poets and Others, whereupon is added The Rising to the Crown of Richard III. Printed in 1593, this bonus feature covers, as the title suggests, the rising to the crown of Richard, and so it doesn't end with his death, which would be tricky, but with his isolation as a tyrant. The problem of writing an autobiography unto death is solved in Christopher Brooke's The Ghost of Richard III, with the narrative told post-mortem. You can find out more about The Ghost of Richard III by going to the show notes. There's a podcast episode where we discuss the poem, and also there's a live-streamed theatre production that I produced earlier in the year. The opening of this short poem is a little tricky to get into. It feels a bit disjointed. It doesn't address the plot directly by saying, you know, "Hi, I'm Richard." It sort of jumps into the narrative of Shaw's wife as an opening gambit, the supposed mistress of Edward IV, Richard's brother, and expounds on her and other women's falling fortune, and his playing fortune at tennis. It has a slightly misogynistic vibe, but Richard isn't supposed to be nice, so boo Richard. After that, it's a lot more clear, so do stick with it. But in terms of overall plot, Richard murders a lot of people to get to the throne. That's basically the plot. He has to talk some people round. Lots of murders, basically. Just a general note, I did change one word, reader, to listener, to suit the medium of which you are listening in. So I leave you with our reading of the poem, and it is performed by David Ault.
The Rising to the Crown of Richard III, written by himself. The stage is set for stately matter fit. Three parts are passed, which prince-like acted were. To play the fourth requires a kingly wit, else shall my muse their muses not come near. Sorrow, sit down, and help my muse to sing, for weep he may not, that was called a king. Shaw's wife, a subject, though a princess mate, had little cause her fortune to lament. Her birth was mean, and yet she lived with state. The king was dead before her honour went. Shaw's wife might fall, and none can justly wonder to see her fall that useth to lie under. Rosamond was fair, and far more fair than she. Her fall was great, and but a woman's fall. Trifles are these, compare them but with me. My fortunes far were higher than they all. I left this land possessed with civil strife, and lost a crown, mine honour and my life. Elstrid I pity, for she was a queen, but for myself, to sigh, I sorrow want. Her fall was great, but greater falls have been. Some falls they have that use the court to haunt. A toy did happen, and this queen dismayed, but yet I see not why she was afraid. Fortune and I, for so the match began, two games we played at tennis for a crown. I played right well, and so the first I won. She scorned the loss, whereat she straight did frown. We played again, and then I caught my fall, England the court, and Richard was the ball. Nor weep I now as children that have lost, but smile to see the poets of this age, like silly boats in shallow rivers tossed, loosing their pains and lacking still their wage, to write of women and of women's falls, who are too light for to be fortune's balls. A king I was, and Richard was my name, born to a crown when first my life began. My thoughts ambitious ventured for the same, and from my nephews I the kingdom won. Nor do I think that this my honour stained. A crown I sought, and I a kingdom gained. Time tyrant fate did fit me for a crown. My father's fall did teach me to aspire. He meant by force his brother to put down, that so himself might hap to rise the higher. And what he lost by fortune I have won, a duke the father, yet a king the son. My father Richard, Duke of York, was called. Three sons he had, all matchless at that time. I, Richard, youngest to them both, was thralled. Yet two of us unto the crown did climb. Edward and I this realm as kings did hold, but George of Clarence could not, though he would. Sad muse set down in terms not heard before. My sable fortune and my mournful tale, say what thou canst, and wish thou couldst say more. My bliss was great, but greater was my bale. I rose with speed, and so did fall as fast. Great was my glory, but it would not last. My brother George did plot for to be king. Sparks of ambition did possess us all. His thoughts were wise, but did no profit bring. I feared his rising, and did make him fall. My reaching brain did doubt what might ensue. I scorned his life, and so he found it true. My brother George, men say, was slain by me, a brother's part to give his brother wine, and for a crown I would his butcher be, for crowns with blood the brighter they will shine. To gain a kingdom still it me behoved that all my lets full soundly were removed. Henry the VI, deprived of his crown, fame doth report I put him to the death. Thus fortune smiled, though after she did frown. A dagger's stab, men say, did stop his breath. I careless was both how and who were slain, so that thereby a kingdom I could gain. Clusters of grapes, full ripened with the heat, nor smaller timber, builded up on height, fall not so fast as persons that are great, losing their honours, bruised with their weight. But fewer means the faster I did rise, and to be king I fortune did despise. My thoughts ambitious spread began to fly, and I a crown did follow with full wing. My hope was small, but yet I meant to try. I had no right, yet longed to be a king. Fear or suspect amazed me not at all. If I were crossed, the worst was but to fall. The lion, fierce, despoiled of his prey, runs not with speed so fast as did my thought. My doubtful mind forbade me long to stay, for why a kingdom was the thing I sought. Now was the time when this was to be done, or blame my thoughts because they it begun. My brother died, and left two sons behind, both under age, unfit to guide the land. This right fell out according to my mind, for now these two were ruled with my hand. England's great lord the subjects did me call, and I was made protector over all. But as the wolf defends the harmless sheep, whose bloody mouth can hardly be content until he spoil what he was set to keep, and silly beast be all to pieces rent. So still a crown did hammer in my head, full of mistrust, till both these two were dead. The elder son with speed to London came, and walls forsook where he had lived before. London, the place of greatest strength and fame, the island's treasure and the English store. For him, Lord Rivers was appointed guide, the king's own uncle by the mother's side. Rivers was wise, but him I could not brook. I well foresaw what harm there might ensue. This to prevent with speed I counsel took. And as I thought, so did I find it true. For if that Rivers should obtain his mind, my heart's desire then hardly could I find. Rivers and Grey of treason I accused, and told the prince what both they did intend. My tale was false, and I the king abused. Thus both their lives unjustly did I end. The king was young, the greater was their grief, and needs my words did urge him to belief. Not long this passed, but hasting to the queen, a post was sent to show what did befall, and who the actors of this fact had been. The Lord Protector was the cause of all. The queen, amazed, did wonder at this news, and scarce did think it. Yet she could not choose. Possessed with fear, four daughters and her son, she thence conveyed into a sacred place, supposing true the harm but now begun, and that I thought to mother all her race. She York's archbishop did entreat for aid, who in the abbey not far distant laid. The bishop came, and mourning found the queen, who did lament the fortune of her son. The realm's distress, the like before not seen, her own misfortune and the state undone. Thus sighed the queen, and wished her state were less, and prayed that heavens would give the king success. "My lord," she said, "my thoughts presage some ill, and mournful sorrow seetheth on my heart. This sudden news with grief my soul doth fill, and I for fear do quake in every part. In this distress we cannot hope to live, except this sacred place some safety give." He then replied,
"Dread sovereign, do not faint, a causeless fear in wisdom do withstand. Yield not too soon, with grief to make complaint, when no such cause approaching is at hand. For feeble minds through weakness coin new fears, when stronger hearts true grief more wisely bears. And if they crown some other, not your son, a thing unlike, yet fear what may befall, then shall the same unto this child be done, whom brother's right by due a king shall call. But tyrant's force will hardly be so bold, during this time the other is in hold." Then, more advised, he told her what he thought. She and her son some causes had to fear, and England's seal he therefore with him brought, which by his place he customed was to bear. Thus he resolved to leave the seal behind, till wiser thoughts straight altered had his mind. The bishop home returned in all haste, and sadly sat, suspecting what might fall. But then my coming made them all aghast, and for the bishop I did straightway call. I knew his deed, and blamed him to his face, and for the seal another had his place. Thus tyrant hate possessed me for a crown, my mind the anvil of a thousand harms. I raised my friends, my foes, I cast them down. This made the subjects flock to me in swarms. My will was strong, I made it for a law, for basest minds are ruled best by awe. I called the council, and did straight persuade, from mother's side to fetch the other son. My drift was further than they well could wade. I gave them reasons why it must be done. The king, a playmate, wanted for his years, and could not well be fitted with his peers. The cardinal went on message to the queen, and used persuasions for her other child. He plainly said her fear had causeless been, nor need she doubt by me to be beguiled. I was protector, chosen by consent, with counsel grave all treason to prevent.
"And I protest," quoth Cardinal, "on my life,
for so indeed the cardinal did suppose.
Your son with safety shall cut off this strife, and you nor place nor land nor son shall lose. Dread sovereign grant, and let your son be free. If he have harm, then set the fault on me.
The queen was moved, and quaking did reply,
A mother's love doth breed a mother's fear, and loath I am those mischiefs for to try with doubtful hazard of a thing so dear. I doubt my lord the nearest of his blood, in true intent scarce wisheth any good. The laws do make my son his mother's ward. Religion bids I should not slack my care, and nature binds mine own for to regard these and his health, my lord. Good reasons are to make my fear no smaller than it is, whilst fear persuades what harm may come of this. Yet take my son, and with my son take all. Come kiss me, son, thy mother's last farewell. Thy years, sweet boy, suspect not what may fall, nor can my tongue for tears thy fortune tell. But hardly crowns their kindred will discern, as you, sweet child, I fear year long shall learn. God bless thee, son, and I, my son, thee bless, thy mother's comfort and thy brother's life. Nay, weep not, son, God send thee good success, and safe defend thee from that tyrant's knife. Cardinal, farewell, be careful of my son, for once I vowed this never to have done.
I and the council in Star Chamber were, to whom the cardinal did in haste resort, who brought the child which ended all my fear. The mother's care he briefly did report. I kissed the child and took it in my arm. Thus none did think I meant it any harm. Then, as the wolf half famished for his prey, or hungry lion that a lamb hath got, my thirsty mind I meant his blood should stay, and yet the wisest not perceive my plot. To the tower in haste I sent him to his brother, and there with speed I both at once did smother. Now, two there was but living in my way, Buckingham and Hastings, both to cross my mind. The one was headed straight without delay, the other favours did unto me bind. To match our children I did him persuade, and Earl of Hereford he himself be made. Now, as the sea before a storm doth swell, or fumes arise before we see the flame, so whispering brute began my drifts to tell, and all imparted unto babbling fame. I deemed it danger speech for to despise, for after this I knew a storm would rise. London's Lord Mayor I used for my turn, and caused him speak what treason had been done. I by these means the people's hearts did turn, and made them eye me as the rising sun. Thus, whilst I meant the island to bring under, the people's heads on news I set to wonder. Then at the cross I caused a doctor preach, to tell the subjects what I wished them know. The man was cunning and had skill to teach. Out of my brain I made his sermon flow. Thus everywhere I did such notice give, as all did cry, Heavens let King Richard live! So did I live, and called was a king. Friends swarmed as fast as bees unto the hive. Thus basest means the highest fortunes bring. The crown obtained did cause my thoughts revive. I scorned my friends, and those did most despise, that were the means by which I did arise. Blood and revenge did hammer in my head, unquiet thoughts did gallop in my brain. I had no rest till all my friends were dead, whose help I used the kingdom to obtain. My dearest friend I thought not safe to trust, nor scarce myself, but that perforce I must. Nor speak I now as if I did repent, unless for this a crown I bought so cheap. For meaner things men wits and lives have spent, which blood have sown and crowns could never reap. Live, Richard, long the honour of thy name, and scorn all such as do thy fortune blame. Thus have I told how I a crown did win, which now torments me that I cannot sleep, where I do end my sorrow did begin, because I got which long I could not keep. My verse is harsh, yet, listener, do not frown. I wore no garland, but a golden crown.
And that was David Ault reading The Rising to the Crown of Richard III, written by himself via Giles Fletcher. The Beyond Shakespeare podcast is produced by me, Robert Crichton. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook or Instagram at Beyond Shakes. Visit our website at beyondshakespeare.org or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare.